Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. I'm very thrilled to have Denise Leon on the show today. Denise is an author and a keynote speaker that inspires business leaders around the world to build great brands and exceptional organizations. So Denise, I am so delighted that we could make this work. Thank you so much for the time that you're giving me today to be on the show. I cannot wait for our listeners to hear from you. You are just an amazing woman. I told you as I was preparing for this interview with you, I'm just like, this lady is so big. You have so much knowledge. And I'm excited about our conversation.
Well, I'm grateful for the opportunity. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Very good. And we also have to give a shout out to Jim Bechtel, because Jim is the one that connected us. And he said, the two of you need to know each other. And we had a call, and I'm so grateful to him. So
yeah, so Jim is my brother-in-law. He's married to my older sister, Vivian Bechtold. And they are not only, you know, a wonderful family, but they are wonderful people. And Jim knows you through the CEO Forum. And so I was just so pleased to have made this connection.
Me too. Well, let's just dig on in here. You said that, you know, Vivian's your older sister. So take us back.
Sure. I was born and raised in St. Louis, Missouri, where you're located. I was so delighted to find out that you were there. So born and raised there and went away to school to Chicago and really have only been back to St. Louis for visits since then. But every time I'm back in St. Louis, I have two priorities in addition to seeing my dad. One is Ted Drew's frozen custard. And the second is toasted ravioli, which you can't get most other places. It's kind of a St. Louis phenomenon. So whenever we go back there, I make my husband, we go get toasted ravioli for dinner and then Ted Drew's for dessert. And I'm a happy woman.
They are amazing. I know anytime we have people come in from out of town, we're like, we have to take you to get toasted ravioli, but also gooey butter cake. I don't know if you remember that or not, Denise. But that is kind of a St. Louis thing as well.
Oh, yes.
And you grew up in Chesterfield. And I told you, when you come back to Chesterfield, Denise, you won't even recognize it.
Yeah. So I went to high school in Chesterfield and most of my friends lived out there. But, you know, that area was kind of as far west as you would travel back when I was growing up. And this is really dating me. Now, when you go back there, like Chesterfield is just the beginning and you can just take Highway 64 and it's beautiful out there. And I was looking at Defiance, Missouri, which is where you are on the map. And I was like, oh, this looks like a beautiful place. So, you know, I have to say I'm based in San Francisco and I've lived most of my adult life in California. And so I consider California kind of my second home now. But, you know, looking at your place, I'm like, you know, maybe I actually could live back there sometime.
Oh my goodness. We would love it. We would love it. We'll take you to some of the awesome wineries out here. So you went to Chicago. Now, what did you major in?
Yeah, well, I general liberal arts background. You know, when I went to college, I thought I either wanted to be an attorney or I wanted to go into advertising. And then I did an internship at a law firm and decided, okay, not going to be an attorney. And so kind of was leaning towards advertising. And actually, it was because I was so passionate about brands When I was growing up, Nike kind of came on the scene, and I was just fascinated by the power of the Nike brand. And that was really when you started to see brands kind of develop. And so I really wanted to understand that. So I worked as an advertising sales rep in school, worked in a bunch of different kind of marketing roles. And then after I graduated, my first job out of college was as a market research analyst for, get this, Spiegel catalogs. I don't know if you remember or you're like old enough to remember them, but Spiegel was like the Macy's or the Sears of its time. Great catalog business. And really there, I learned how to understand what customers wanted and needed. You know, we did a lot of surveys, a lot of research, really trying to unpack how people made decisions about what to buy and where to shop. So it was really just a great foundation for what ended up being a pretty long marketing career.
Mm-hmm. You have gone so deep in this area. That's why you're an expert, you know. But then you have also seen marketing change, right? Because we don't have the catalogs. Well, some do still, but mostly it's all digital now. I mean, you've seen a lot of change.
Yeah. And so, you know, I think that the channels and the tactics change to your point. And actually, I kind of find it interesting that Amazon this year put out a huge holiday catalog, a printed piece, which I thought, okay, so now we're, you know, coming full circle. But in general, you know, the channels, the distribution, the tactics will change, but there are some, you know, core brand building principles that remain eternal. And that's really kind of where my focus is. What is your strategy? What is your culture? What are your operations? How are you building your brand within your organization? And those things, I think, are not only timeless, but they're also universal across all types of businesses, all types of organizations of size, age, scale, et cetera.
Right. Well, that is a perfect segue because I want to get into that. You've written several books.
Yeah. But
the first thing I really want to talk about, in a recent McKinsey survey, 82% of U.S. workers said it's important for companies to have a purpose, but only 42% report that their company's stated purpose had a real impact. Now that the stakes are so high, the world is watching, it is time to close that gap. You know, and McKinsey says purpose should guide everything else and be evident in all a company does. A fully embedded purpose should show up across all the elements of the organization's DNA. And you just had mentioned the elements. So the elements might change. But really, I mean, the purpose is so important. Why is that important? And then, Denise, I wouldn't mind you telling our listeners, because I know in your book, Fusion, you even go in and say, maybe you don't have a purpose, but here is a way that maybe you can pinpoint your purpose.
Yeah, well, you know, I think that why do we exist is a fundamental human question. And that applies to organizations also. You know, why does your organization exist? Especially when there are so many other choices out there. I think in practically every category, every industry, it is so cluttered, it's so competitive that you really need to stand out and be different. And your ability to differentiate on what you sell, your products and services, what you're offering is, has become a lot more difficult because there are so many choices. Whereas if you differentiate on why you do what you do, there's a lot more potential for you to stand out and to really make a meaningful connection with all of your customers, as well as your employees and all your stakeholders, because you're giving them something to believe in. You're giving them meaning, focus, and inspiration. You know, I think that sometimes business leaders will have some sort of lofty sense of purpose. And so they say, this is our purpose, but then they don't do anything to operationalize that purpose. And that's where the breakdown exists, because, you know, everyone can state a mission statement or a purpose statement, but it's a much harder to ensure that everything you do is aligned with it. And that's really the important work that needs to happen. But if you don't know what your purpose is or what it should be, there are several exercises or techniques or ways you can get at, and I'll talk about one in just a moment. But I think that in general, you know, you have to think about, what is the impact you want to make in the world? Like, if you were not to exist, what would be missing in the world? Or if you were to, at the end of the life of your organization, you know, discontinue, what would be that hole that you would be leaving? And therefore, you ensure that you are actually creating something of value, doing something of value while you do exist. So that's, you know, the reason why purpose is so important. One way that you can get at your purpose is a technique or an exercise that I did lift from Jim Collins and Jerry Porras' Built to Last. And it's the five whys exercise. It's basically starting with a descriptive statement about your business. Like, you know, we sell technology solution or, you know, something like that. And then you ask yourself, why is that important? And, you know, it's often helpful if you kind of draw on a piece of paper five concentric circles, and on the outermost circle, you write down that descriptive statement, and then in the next circle, you write, why is that important? And then you ask yourself again, why is that important? And then why is that important? And by digging into really why is what you do so important, what is the significance, what is the impact that you really are able to make or you're trying to make, that will help clarify what your purpose can be or should be or how it should be articulated.
Very good. Well, thank you so much for that. And I want to move into your book, What Great Brands Do. What this is, it says seven principles of brand building that separates the best from the rest. And I have not read the whole book, but I've read a lot of it. And I've shared with you that I've got highlights and I've got notes in the margin. But, you know, a couple of the things you say with great brands, the culture and the values do not play supporting roles in the business operations. Culture and values are the brand.
Yeah.
You know, you talk a lot about the culture and you say principle one is what great brands do is they start on the inside.
Yeah.
I've already mentioned, Denise, the stakeholders. Obviously, you may have shareholders, which would be a stakeholder.
Yes.
But, you know, you got to start with your employees.
Yes.
You know, your employees and your clients are the ones you really need to focus on, right?
Yeah.
So talk a little bit about principle one, if you would.
Well, let me start by saying that, you know, the word brand or the term brand often gets kind of misunderstood. And you might think that your brand is your name or your logo or maybe your tagline or some sort of image that you're promoting. And while all of those things are elements or dimensions of your brand, I always say that your brand is what you do and how you do it. It's basically the way that you show up and the value you create for your customers. And so because of that, to your point, your culture, that needs to be woven into your culture. Your culture needs to be kind of like brand driven or brand led or brand inspired so that everything that you do as an organization actually delivers on what you stand for. What great brands do, when I talk about great brands start inside you, we look at the great brands like Nike or Apple, you know, maybe Starbucks or whatever. And a lot of people kind of look at those brands and say, oh, well, they got to be so successful because, you know, they have really cool advertising, you know, or maybe, you know, good timing or, you know, just plain luck. But really what those companies had at the beginning was a culture and a leader who was committed to cultivating a certain kind of culture that then enabled the company to grow into the great brand that it is today.
Very good. Well, we have so much more that I want to talk about, Denise, but we do need to take a quick break and we'll be right back with Denise.
We at Technology Partners understand the difficulty to find work that is engaging, yields high pay, and facilitates a work-life balance. Over the past 25 years, we have enhanced the IT teams of over 244 client companies and placed more than 3,000 IT professionals with them on short-term or permanent basis. Our staff includes over 300 experienced IT professionals. So if you're looking to take the next step in your career, visit jobs.technologypartners.net, apply for a job, and one of our expert recruiters will be happy to connect with you.
So we've been talking a lot about culture and brand. You know, you talk about San Polisamo and how he had to come in and completely reset IBM's stagnant culture.
So this was back in the early 2000s, and San Polisamo came in and he discovered that the organization, they had really kind of maybe gotten stagnant and had lost sight of really what its core founding values were. And so he went through a process of really digging into what should the values of this organization be. And he engaged all, 400,000 employees in an exercise about articulating what the values of the organization should be, and end up being able to turn around the company in large part because of the culture work. And, you know, I think it's a very similar parallel to what Satya Nadella has done at Microsoft more recently. He'd been a part of the company for a long time, but, you know, ascending to the CEO role, I think, gave Satya a perspective that the culture at Microsoft had become, he says, like, people were a bunch of like know-it-alls, and he wanted to cultivate a culture of learn-it-all. And so he really promoted a culture of discovery and risk-taking and experimentation, as well as empathy, understanding what their customers wanted and needed. And again, as a result of turning around the culture of the organization, he's been able to turn around the business performance of the organization as well.
Great examples. So Denise, in your book, What Great Brands Do, you've got 7 principles. Actually, there's a bonus one at the end. There is a brand is business. But I told you, I camped out a long time on principle 2. I mean, it just really resonated with my soul. And principle 2 is avoid selling products.
Yes.
But tell the story of Nike.
Nike never promotes its products, pushes features, touts its technology without linking those attributes or those features to customers' emotions, to their aspirations, to their values. And that's how Nike has become so successful and has sustained its success for so many years. You know, people are emotional beings. And as much as we would like to think that we make rational, sound decisions, most of our decisions are made by our emotions. And so great brands understand that, and they seek to make an emotional connection. So instead of thinking about what does your product do, what are all these really cool features or attributes of the product, think about how does it make people feel? And in today, I would think that brands go even further and really help people identify with the brand or make them feel like the brand identifies with them. So this is a brand for me. And, you know, Nike continues to do that today. You know, I think even with its work more in the social responsibility and the racial justice area with Colin Kaepernick, et cetera, they've taken a stand, and a pretty provocative one. But what I think it has done is bonded people to the brand. Certain people, you know, the brand is not for everyone, but those who it resonates with, they really feel like this brand gets me. It understands what's important to me, and it is working towards purposes in the world that I want to be a part of. So that's what great brands do.
Right. Well, yeah. And you say our emotions impact 90% of purchases.
Exactly.
Now, here's the deal, though. Nike didn't always get it right. One of their first campaigns, when the big fitness revolution and people were, you know, really getting into running and things like that, and you talk about one of their first big advertising campaigns, they did it to a revolution. Mm-hmm. And they would have John McEnroe, and they would have these professional runners. Well, a person like me, you know, I don't do 5Ks. I couldn't relate to that, right? And so it kind of all fell on deaf ears. Mm-hmm. And then when they came up with the campaign of Just Do It, they were showing 60-year-old grandmas, you know, that were running. And I think you had even mentioned the next one was Find Your Greatness.
Yeah. And so I think, Lisa, you make a good point about how it's really easy to get off track. And, you know, even though you might know that you need to make an emotional connection, it's really easy to get distracted. And so I think that's why part of brand building is having like the discipline and the relentlessness and the commitment to these principles to say, everything we do, are we building our brand? Are we making that emotional connection? So, you know, even, you know, when you think about your social media communication, yes, it's great to be trendy and to kind of be in and talk about the topics of the day. But I think you always need to be linking back to what are we saying and doing as a brand that is going to attract people to us, kind of like a magnetic quality to get people to really feel a connection with us.
You just said trend. And I'm thinking your third principle, which I think is really going to surprise our listeners. great brands ignore trends.
Yeah, you know, we've all been taught, I think, that, you know, we need to follow the trends in order for us to remain relevant to our customers. And it's true that we need to be informed by the trends. We need to understand what's going on out there. But if you follow a trend, you're going to end up following everyone else. So, you know, when we were prepping for this call, we were talking about Tom's, the shoe company, and how they had started this wonderful program where they would give a pair of shoes away for every pair that a customer purchased. And what a wonderful model. And that was like the basis for their company and really their identity, their purpose. You know, so wonderful for them. But then what we saw is that all these other companies started following what Tom's did. And so they would implement the exact same model. You know, you buy a pair of glasses, we're going to give a pair of glasses away. And what that does is it's not breaking new ground. It's not fresh. It's not news. And it doesn't seem authentic to your customers because they can see that you're just doing what someone else is doing as opposed to doing what is coming from your purpose and your own values. So, you know, be informed by the trends, but be willing to veer from them, advance your own cultural movement, and that everyone else will follow you.
Well, I want to talk just a little bit about fusion, because fusion is your latest book.
Yes.
What happens when a company's brand and culture are not aligned?
It can lead to a lot of risk, poor performance, crisis. I mean, just look at what happened at Wells Fargo. I want to be clear that not all of Wells Fargo was bad, and this was a problem in one specific unit of their business. But, you know, Wells Fargo had always had a very kind of wholesome brand image, very old-fashioned. Even during the Great Recession and the recovery, they kind of stood out as a brand that kind of did the right thing. But then we discovered, thanks to a bunch of whistleblowers, that in this one unit of their company, the culture was very cutthroat and focused on hitting numbers that were impossible. And so the reps started opening up fake bank accounts and credit card accounts in customers' names without their permission. And so you have this really huge disconnect between this wonderful feel-good brand and this really dysfunctional, corrupt culture. Any company would have suffered from the revelation of these corrupt practices. But I think it hurt Wells Fargo more because they had had such a disconnect with their brand. You know, when you have that disconnect, you open yourself up to so much risk and crisis. On the other hand, if your external brand identity and your internal corporate culture, organizational culture are integrated and aligned, then you unleash so much power. You not only are able to motivate and align your workforce because everyone is working towards one purpose and everyone knows what's important and why they do it and how they should be doing it, but you also establish a competitive advantage that's very difficult for people to imitate or to undercut because people can knock off your product. It's a lot harder for them to imitate your culture. And so you're able to maintain a sustainable competitive advantage. And finally, you pass the test of authenticity with your customers. You know, these days, customers have the ability and the proclivity to find out really what is this company like. And so rather than just looking at the image that you're projecting in your marketing, they're really finding out how you're operating as an organization. And if these two things are in disconnect, you lose their trust and credibility. And on then the flip side, if they are integrated and aligned, they get the sense that you are an authentic brand and someone they can trust and they want to do business with. So fusion, integrating brand and culture, it really does power the world's greatest companies.
I love that. And we know trust is so important.
Yes.
For listeners out there that are running organizations or business owners that are running their own organization, it may be during this pandemic, the go-to may be to say, oh, we've got to hunker down. But in one of your Forbes articles, you say history will prove that companies that continue to invest in their business during recessions end up continuing to grow after the downturn, while those that retreat tend to fall behind if they even make it at all.
So many business leaders I've seen, because there's so much uncertainty out there, they have kind of pressed the pause button on their business. You know, they're kind of in wait and see mode, you know, not really doing anything. Maybe they've even shut down. They're definitely not investing. And what the research shows is that brands that shut down their advertising and marketing during a downturn actually take an average of 5 years to recover the market share they lost. But on the flip side, companies, for example, in the Great Recession, companies that made significant acquisitions while everyone else was hitting the pause button, they actually ended up outperforming those other companies and were able to emerge from the recession that much stronger and that much bigger and that much more powerful. So now is not the time to hit the pause button. It's to hit the go button, you know, to really take some risks, do some experiments, try new things, and figure out how do we evolve our business in ways that will anticipate what customers are going to want and need in the future, not just trying to hang on to what we used to do in the past.
Great advice. I wanted to tell our listeners about a really fun article that Denise wrote, Brands to Watch in 2021. She's taken the whole alphabet and every letter of the alphabet, she talks about a brand to watch. So, you know, there's a few in here, Disney, Edge Computing, Google, Hilton.
Yeah. And I would also just add to the list, Amazon. In the article back in December, I listed all these reasons why we should pay attention to Amazon because, you know, they had grown so much during the pandemic. I mean, they were already huge, but then they've grown so much. But at the same time, they're facing increased regulation and scrutiny. You know, we're now seeing that CEO Jeff Bezos is planning to step down from a CEO role, just become chairman of the board. And so that will, I think, have huge implications on that organization. So I definitely put that at the top of my list, not just because it starts with A, but because I think that they are definitely going to be going through some changes in this next year.
It's a fascinating article. So I would encourage our listeners to go out and Google that. So Denise, you know, what do you believe is the something extra that every leader needs?
Well, Lisa, I am a person of faith. And so I believe that having a faith, you know, in my case, it's a Christian faith, but having just any faith in general, I think really does give leaders that something extra. It is something that I found when I work with people of faith. You find a sense of not only purpose, like we were talking about before, that they really are very grounded in this underlying purpose that is linked to their faith, but also a real sense of humility, that they don't know everything, they don't have it all figured out, but you know that they are trusting in their God, you know, as part of their journey. That humility, I think, affects the way they interact with everyone. I find that leaders of faith tend to be those who really successfully build up people and build up great organizations.
Oh, I love that. So Denise, is there something that you want our listeners to know about? And if so, how can they get involved in that?
Yeah, well, Lisa, thank you so much for asking. And thank you so much for having me on your show. This has been a great conversation. Yeah, I would just say that, you know, I am a keynote speaker. I love to inspire audiences either virtually or in person now as things are reopening. And I've just launched a few new keynote topics for 2021, Ready and Resilient Leadership for Now and Next. So it's really about helping your leaders understand how to prepare their organizations to perform not only in this current uncertainty, but also to be ready for the future. And another topic in that suite of new topics for 2021 is employee experience disrupted. And just the idea that work has really changed. And we as leaders need to know how do we continue to keep our employees engaged, motivated, focused, and productive. And so I would love the opportunity to explore ways that I can inspire and teach your audience. And so thank you again for the opportunity just to have this conversation.
Absolutely. It's been so much fun. And it needs to be about 3 hours long, I think. to get it all in. But we will share with our listeners your contact information and how they can get in touch. And thank you again so much for being on the show today, Denise.
Thank you, Lisa.
Thank you for listening to today's show. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2019. For show notes or to reach Lisa, visit tpi.co/podcast. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or wherever you listen.